Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's the goddamn Philosopher's Stone podcast with me, Jordan Strauss, and he,
Sam LeBoon.
There we go. I was just telling Sam I'm having a bad week, so bear with me. Anxiety high, blood pressure really high, sleep very bad, anxiety riddled. I got my blood test back, though, and nothing seems to be out of place, which makes me even more concerned. Anyways, how's your week been?
It's been good. Let me try and think here. Did a couple open mics.
Good stuff.
Feel fine physically. Blood pressure. Haven't bothered checking it because what's the point? I feel good.
I mean, I've never bothered checking. I just happened to check it because my dad was checking his at my grandma's birthday dinner. And I'm like, oh, let me try that. It was like,
broke the machine.
Higher than an 85-year-old man's. So I'm like, this must be broken. I tried like three more times. It was not broken. Went and tried a machine at the pharmacy. Same results. So I'm going to try again tonight. And if it's still high, I just got to go see a doctor and be like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Restless leg syndrome. Maxed out all week.
Yeah, make sure you try at least 10 different machines before you make a decision.
Yeah, I'm going to go to a different pharmacy. It is probably related somewhat to the weekend I had, bachelor party weekend. Pushed my body beyond its limits, as you do on a bachelor party. But the recovery rate in your 30s is just abysmal compared to the last bachelor party I went to.
Well, the body... What do they say? The mind is willing, the body is weak. The flesh is weak.
The flesh, my flesh is failing me.
And you reap what you sow, I say.
Well, I've also been slacking on my exercise regimen, and I've been eating like shit, and I've had stressful things occur. Alcohol intake was extreme over the bachelor party, so I think I'm just going to have to like really just live like a monk for the next week. And hopefully my blood pressure goes down and my anxiety goes away.
Mm-hmm. You mean like doing a lot of prayer?
If that's what it takes, man, I'll convert back to religion if God has the solution to my restless leg syndrome.
I feel like that's the main difference between monks and normal people. It's not like the main difference is that I think they pray like all day pretty much.
I thought they meditate. Oh, no. Well, it depends on the monks.
Oh, which monks are you talking about? Yeah.
I'm thinking like Shaolin monk.
Oh,
like I'm not gonna be out there. Yeah,
they do hardcore calisthenics and exercise and stuff. Yeah,
I'm telling you right now, by the end of next week, I'll be able to balance on a tip of a spear with my stomach.
Oh, yeah, well, like you'll be able to balance on the tip of your enemy's sword after they try and stab you. Just jump and stab on their sword.
Do you ever see the Shaolin monks when they put on their performance and there's always that one part where like they're like five of them have spears and they lift one guy up on the tip of the spears and it's like to show how strong he is. He's like flexing.
How strong his butt is that the spears don't.
Well, it's usually on his stomach and chest. I'm sure dulled, but it's still impressive.
Wow. Yeah, I think if you went full Shaolin for a week, you'd probably forget about your hangover pretty quick.
Maybe not Shaolin. What's one that kind of just vibes? Buddhist? A Buddhist monk? I think the Shaolins are Buddhist, but...
I don't know if monks... I feel like monks, they have to be... They're quite disciplined and they have a strict ascetic lifestyle. Vibes sounds like Matthew McConaughey style.
Yes. No. I think he does too many drugs. You know what? I'm just going to relax and eat healthy for the next few days. Do minor exercise, you know, get a sweat going every day. Hopefully that results in a better overall vibe or what health. I just feel like I'm way my internal my gauges and my dials are all askew right now. So I need to center. I need to realign, find my chakras, put them back in order.
I think you should do that. But instead of doing the mild exercise, you should do intense exercise.
Like till I'm throwing up?
No, not till you're throwing up, but to the point where you're like, I'm not sure if I can finish this workout.
What if I was to tell you that it only took mild exercise to make me want to throw up?
Well, then that's not mild exercise. That's intense.
Yeah, I'll get back on the treadmill. For a while there, I was doing like 3 days a week. I'd walk for 20 minutes and then jog for 40 minutes. And I'd be sweating by the end. And that was going good. I was feeling good. But yeah, definitely I need to make some changes here because it's unsustainable.
Unsustainable. Yeah. The body will give back what you give the body.
It will I'm ready to make the changes.
Ready to start giving your body
what it wants.
Yeah. Well, I don't know
what it wants, what it needs.
Yeah. Your body doesn't always know what it wants, I don't think.
My body just knows it's not happy. That's all it knows right now.
Homeostasis is not in equilibrium.
I can feel like each limb of my body is like in a different state of being.
Oh, you're like an octopus.
Yeah. but none of them are happy. They're just all unhappy in different ways.
All the limbs are pissed.
Sleep quality is probably my number one issue right now. So, and it always has been. But I'm going to therapy. I'm trying to solve this via therapy. Learn
some
techniques.
You're like kicking?
Not kicking. It literally feels like there's an electrical pulse going through my legs at all times. Right now, I have it. It used to be I'd only get it at night, but now I get it all day.
Damn.
It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Anyway, I would really think you would need to see a neurologist about it. That's what I would think.
Those are hard to come by these days.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Or you could ask ChatGPT.
I've already talked its ear off.
Oh, really?
ChatGPT, it refuses to speak to me now.
Oh, man.
Says it can't handle all my questions.
You are too curious, young grasshopper.
No, it always it always just gives me a bunch of theories, but at the end it always says you got to go see a doctor. But I've been to the doctor so many times about this exact issue.
Damn, maybe they just don't know. Maybe the medical science doesn't know why people get restless legs.
They don't. They don't really know. Magnesium, they say, is it's magnesium, lack of magnesium, but I've been taking magnesium every day.
Ugh. Can you control metal with your mind yet?
I wish. Get something useful out of this. Anyways, enough about my trials and tribulations. I'm sure this is beating a dead horse to all of our listeners. They all know I'm an unhealthy swine. But I'm making incremental improvements throughout the months and years.
Well, that's good to hear. I hope it gets better. I hope the therapist can find the inner demon that is twitching your leg.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, you got puppet one master. Demon living in your kneecap. he's going to town on that nerve.
It's my left knee. I know it. It's my left kneecap. It's always sinister. Giving me, it's the sinister of both of them are sinister, but one is simply evil.
Beyond the pale. Well, anyways. Interesting. Interesting. We're talking about brains because today I thought we could revisit a little consciousness talk.
Let's do it. And if I lose consciousness during this podcast, can you alert the authorities, please?
Which authorities?
The Catholic Church.
The Catholic Church. All right. Shall do. They, interestingly, the Pope or the Vatican, I guess, held a news conference today, putting out new guidelines for how the church should respond to supernatural occurrences and miracles and stuff like that.
And what's the new guidelines?
I think what they're doing is they're moving away from like the system where it's like yes or no. And they're doing a new system where they send in Russell Crowe and he makes the determination if it's a possession or not.
Very wise. Very wise. No. I mean, they should send in psychologists first, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I say that because Russell Crowe is in two separate exorcism franchises simultaneously. Never been done before.
Wow. But no one else could pull it off like him.
But seriously, what they did is they're instead of being like, yes, this is supernatural. No, that is not supernatural. it's more of a gradualist approach, and it seems less about making the determination one way or the other, and more about I don't know. You could probably look it up, but it seems like they're not, they're trying to stop telling people that they're not seeing stuff because people don't believe them.
Right. Well, good for them. Who is this? Pope Francis? Are we still, is it still Francis?
Something like, yeah, for Pope Francis, I think. I don't know.
Cool, cool, cool.
Anyway, yeah, that's interesting. So consciousness. So I saw an interview recently. This is the Skeptic podcast with Michael Shermer, and he had on a, I think of either a philosopher, I think it was a neuroscientist, Christoph Koch, and they were talking about integrated information theory and panpsychism.
Okay.
Do you, did those terms mean anything to you?
I heard the word cock and then I blanked out. What? Can you say it again?
Integrated information theory and panpsychism.
Integrated information theory and panpsychism. Panpsychism sounds familiar.
Yeah. Well, panpsychism is the idea that all matter is conscious at a fundamental level. Basically, that mind and consciousness and matter are one and the same thing. Every particle is conscious.
Right, right. That's wild.
Yeah. Very old theory, but it's a way to solve the hard problem of consciousness, which is how do you explain how unconscious physical matter can somehow produce conscious experiences and qualia? How could that possibly happen?
That's the age-old question, isn't it?
Yeah, and one way around that question is to say we just have to take it for granted that everything is conscious, and then we just have to work out, sort of reverse engineer how physical matter could accommodate conscious properties. And that's basically what they do. And Michael Shermer is a skeptic of this, and so he was taking Christoph Koch to task on this in a collegial way. Of course, they're nice; they're not at each other's throats or anything.
Good to hear.
Yeah, but they wanted to talk. They talked about something interesting, and I felt like Koch or Koch or however you say his name, he was trying to argue this point, and I felt like he didn't do a very good job of it. So I thought we could talk about it more on this podcast, but
well, obviously we're gonna do a better job.
Well, so they're arguing about objective reality and what is included in objective reality. And so Michael Shermer was saying that something like it, well, like, first of all, like, how would you define objective reality?
I would define it as objective reality. It's hard to say, because at first I want to be like, well, it's in the reality that a bunch of people can all agree on, but so many people agree on stuff that's not based in reality. So I would say something that can be, my other instinct is to say something that can be measured and reproduce the measurements, like a bunch of different measurements taken by a bunch of different types of measurement instruments, and they all agree on the same results, you know what I mean? But that doesn't explain stuff like emotions and, like, you know, ideas, which are still real but cannot be measured. Objective reality.
Would you think it could be something like where, like Philip K. Dick, I think he said, like, objective reality is whatever's left after you stop believing in it.
I can see where he's going with that. It's the stuff that doesn't require any belief or leaps of faith to say that this is a real thing, right? But when it comes down to it, you can always go and claim that everything's a hallucination, everything's a simulation, nothing is real. So how do you get down to what the core reality is? Base reality, I think they call it in the Marvel movies.
Is that what they call the quantum level in Marvel? In Marvel, base reality?
I'm not sure.
So stupid. Anyway, yeah, that's interesting. Stuff you don't have to believe in. Michael Shermer was saying objective reality is whatever. Like another way to put it, you could say subjective reality is stuff that is different from person to person.
Yes. So
depending on the observer,
it's a point of opinion, right?
Yeah. Depending on the observer, there might be a different reality. So if I taste ice cream, I might think like, oh, that tastes good. Yes. But if someone else tastes it, they might think, oh, that tastes terrible.
It's that whole thing about everybody needs to live their truth. Like it's such a weird phrase, right?
Yeah. Live your favorite flavor of ice cream.
Yeah. In my world, I'm not a huge ice cream fan, but other people love it. So what's the reality? Yeah. Is ice cream good or bad?
I think it's gross. How it just melts in your mouth. I think that's disgusting.
I don't like the texture. I prefer sorbet. I'm a sorbet man.
Gelato, yeah.
Gelato, sure. We'll do that too. Less cream.
Less cream.
More just like the closer we can get to just like a Slurpee, the better.
Hell yes. So if subjective reality are things that it depends on your point of view, then objective reality would have to be something that doesn't depend on your point of view. No matter what your point of view is, objective reality is the same. And so how could we, and so Michael Shermer said the way you get to that is you delete all the conscious entities from the universe and see what's left.
Right. And so there's no opinion has no play in it, right? Like the observer, if you remove all observers, you're left with reality.
You're left with objective reality.
Yes. It's like, does a tree shit in the woods or whatever that phrase is? When the tree falls, it makes no sound if there's nothing to hear it. And it's like, then you have to get into what is a sound technically. Sound is what we perceive waves in the air, like pressure waves in the air. Our brain interprets it as sound, but without ears to hear it, it is simply vibrations in the air, right? Is this relating anything to what you're talking about?
Oh, no, it is. Yeah, it is exactly. I think it might have been the other. I think it might have been Koch who said, or Koch who said that objective reality is whatever's left when you delete all the conscious entities. But yeah, that is like part of the thing. And then they did talk about this. They addressed that question. Like, not just like if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound, but are trees part of objective reality? If you delete all the conscious entities from the universe, do trees still exist? And this was, they had a big argument about this.
Okay. I don't see how trees wouldn't exist if humans didn't exist.
Okay. So you're Michael Shermer. You think you delete all the conscious entities from the universe, trees are still there.
Trees are there, but the idea of a tree, the way we think of trees, is not there anymore.
What's the difference between a tree and our idea of a tree?
Well, we probably attribute certain characteristics to trees that wouldn't be present if there was no one to observe them.
Okay, such as?
Well, we think they grow upwards, but that's only because we observe everything in relation to gravity.
Uh-huh.
We think we think they produce something that we call oxygen, but if we weren't there to breathe it, it would just be an anonymous chemical compound, I guess. That maybe wasn't the best example. To us, they are a symbol of nature and purity.
and they provide fruit. You know, it's a source of it's a resource to us.
No, that's powerful. There's a lot wrapped up in our conscious experience of a tree.
Yes. If you see if you'd never seen a tree before and you saw one for the first time, it would be a completely different experience than when I look out and see a tree here for the millionth time.
Yeah.
Everything that changed from that first impression to how I feel about it now, those are all things that I, as a conscious being, has attributed to what a tree is.
Yeah. Would it be fair to say that you would say that if there were no conscious entities, then the tree, like the physical structure of the tree, would still exist, but other than the physical structure and the chemicals, the cells and stuff, other than that, there's nothing of our concept of a tree left.
Other than the exact, the makeup, the chemical makeup and the atoms and the electrons that make up a tree, everything other than that, we attribute. I mean, it's weird because it's still a fact that they produce oxygen. Even if we weren't around, that would still be happening.
Still be part of objective reality.
Yes.
That the tree produces oxygen.
It's the importance of oxygen that we put onto it.
Right. So the importance is gone, but the fact that it produces it is still part of objective.
The fact remains, if there was nothing to breathe the oxygen would still be made.
Okay, yeah. So you'd
be an anonymous gas being produced.
Yeah, so you sound like you have Michael Shermer's opinion, which is trees are part of objective reality. Take away all the conscious entities in the universe, trees are still there. And, yes. Yeah, okay. So Christoph Koch, he had the opposite. He has the opposite opinion. He thinks trees are not part of objective reality. You eliminate all the conscious entities from the universe, then there are no more trees.
You're going to have to explain that one a little bit, because it's not like we're generating. Is he saying that we're generating reality with our conscious minds?
I don't think he's saying that, because I think, I'm not exactly sure about that, but here's his argument. And it's not actually his argument. This is an older argument, and I don't think he did a great job explaining it, but I'll try to do better. Basically, the idea is that, like you said, the tree, right? Our experience of a tree includes not just the physical structure of the tree, but also a bunch of other things, like its value to us.
Yeah,
what we associate, all those stuff, blah blah blah. And that's true for sure. But it's not just that it has, according to Christoph Koch, it's not just that it has all these extra values that we attach to it. The physical structure of the tree itself is, and the chemical composition and all of those things are part of how our conscious experience is organized and integrated to present a version of reality to us. Now, so all of the elements of the tree, the cells, the molecules, these are actually constructs for us to process reality that we don't actually have access to. Our concepts of space and dimension and all that, those are all artifacts of our conscious experience. Those are not part of objective reality. Those are an interpretation of our mind. The tree is undifferentiated. In reality, the tree is undifferentiated from the rest of the universe. There is no border between the tree and the rest of the universe. It's all one big field.
Well, I mean, I understand like that it's made of this, everything's kind of made up of the same stuff. So we're really talking about just like, there's different, it's all one, it's all a homogenous thing, the universe. There's just different densities of different types of particles in different areas that present themselves as objects as we know them.
Well, I don't
know. Is that what he means? That's,
no, he'd go even farther than that. He'd say, particles right? Those are those are also part of how your brain interprets reality. This is just a, particles are just a postulate of physics to explain certain causes and effects that are detected with instruments.
Right.
It's, there's no reality to it. It's all just, it's all math that we use to make sense of instrument readings. It's a model to help us understand reality, but it is not itself reality.
Interesting. It's a very hard for me to wrap my mind around.
Yeah, because
current state.
Yeah, it is. It's a pretty big conflict. I mean, in any state, it's hard to wrap your mind around.
Okay, good.
Yeah, but anyway, that was their debate. I don't know. I don't know which side I come down on it really. I don't know. It's a tricky one.
I mean, I don't find it very useful to just say, like, so where does reality begin and end for this other guy?
Well, he's a panpsychist, so he thinks, I think according to him, if you deleted all conscious entities from the universe, there would be nothing left because everything is conscious anyway. So you can't actually delete it.
So that doesn't mean, see, that's like, to me, that's just like some woo-woo stuff. That if all conscious beings left the universe would cease to exist.
Well, he's a panpsychist. So for him, every piece of matter must be conscious. Not just a brain, but even like a, anywhere. Well, according to him, everything is conscious, but there's like only conscious experience when you have what they call integrated information of a certain complexity.
So he thinks a rock is conscious, but it can't experience its consciousness.
Correct.
That's something dumb. Like that.
Well, think about it like this. Your conscious experience, you have what's called, I guess you could say active. They break consciousness down into different things, but they have active consciousness, or I forget what the technical term is, but there's stuff that you're paying attention to, that you're aware of, that you're conscious of. Could it be that you could be conscious of something without knowing that you're conscious of it?
Like subconsciously aware, like, you know,
like, yeah. Like for example, what's the capital of China?
Qingdao.
Incorrect.
What is it then? You don't Beijing. Know. Fuck you.
Okay, I'll try an easier one. What's the capital of France?
Paris.
Paris. Yeah, right. Another
one. I like this game.
What's the capital of Mongolia?
Genghis Town.
Wow.
Khan City. What is it?
Ulaanbaatar.
Oh, shut up.
But the point is with Paris is right, like you know the capital of France is Paris, but in any given moment you're not like consciously aware of that you know.
Right. It's in a folder in the back of my brain.
Right. So your conscious experience is sort of dictated by the organization of your brain and your body. The way all of that information is integrated creates your conscious experience. So for a rock, it isn't organized in any sort of complexity. There's no information integrated. So I'm trying to do my best here to help them. So it won't have like a conscious experience like you do. But yeah, if you could somehow make the rock into a like a computer of some kind, then the information would be integrated and it would be conscious.
How is it receiving any information at all? It has no sensory organs. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, like, so that's where
I'm getting confused here. Like, yeah, where is this information latent in its existence? Where is it? If you like, it's not. You're saying if it could integrate the information, it would be conscious.
If the rock molecules, I don't know what the chemical composition of a rock is. If you could somehow make a computer out of the rock, it would be conscious. Because the information would be integrated in such a way, according to this theory, right? So why is your
brain... Well, basically, he's just saying you have to give something a brain for it to be conscious.
Doesn't have to be a brain. It could, I mean, according to this theory, your thermostat has consciousness.
Because it can detect temperatures?
Because it's integrated information. It's a circuit that has to take in information and have inputs and outputs and stuff.
So how complex does a circuit have to be to become consciousness? Or conscious, they, not self-aware, but conscious.
They have like a value for it called theta, but I don't think it's defined yet.
Huh. So my light switch circuit, which is literally just a one-way circuit.
That's... Yeah, well, it depends on like how much information has to be integrated, but they would just say, yes, whenever you have a sufficient amount of information, however they quantify that, there's consciousness is present. But that you have to be very careful in assuming that we have any understanding at all of what it would be like to be a thermostat.
But you're telling me a thermostat knows what it's like to be a thermostat?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I have a much easier time making the leap to living organisms that maybe don't seem like they have consciousness actually have, like, you know, plants or something.
Yeah. I mean, with this, you have to really pull apart the elements of conscious experience and remember that under this theory, your conscious experience, the nature of it, is determined by the way the information is integrated in your body. And the amount of the way information is integrated in you is very complex and has all sorts of functions. And that's what gives rise to the particular nature of your conscious experience. You are in no way whatsoever at all like a thermostat. So I think it's like, I don't think you can take from this theory and think like, oh, I know what it, there must be something that it's like to be a thermostat. I don't even know if you
can. I can imagine what it's like to be a thermostat. Oh, it's a little hot. Better bring it down a little bit. Oh, we're getting a little cold. Better bump it up a couple of degrees.
Or like the internet would be conscious, I think, under their theory.
Man, I think if the internet was decreed conscious, it would also have to be decreed psychopathic and sociopathic. Diagnose the internet's personality.
Yeah, I mean, we have to ask, like, what is it look? Can, does it have any sensations? Probably not. It doesn't have nerve endings. Like, I don't know. It's very weird.
I saw an article recently. This is kind of a tangent, but sort of related, that the woman who invented, I think, Bumble or Hinge or one of these dating apps says the next thing that's going to happen for dating apps is everybody's going to have a very complicated AI version of themselves. And then the AIs will just go on dates with each other and then report back which date went the best.
Hmm. I think dating apps are going to die.
You think so?
Yeah.
What's going to replace them? We're going to go back to the old school way of doing things?
I do think so, yeah.
They are a very, I mean, I might be an outlier about finding my spouse on a dating app, but yeah, the bulk of my experience on dating apps was they were just kind of an empty.
They don't work anymore because now, like, you have to pay. And it's just insane. Like, you'd be insane to spend money on one of them, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, like, and it's also the whole thing about, like, everybody's got so many options now where you're just paralyzed by options. It's like when I go into the convenience store when I'm stoned to pick a snack, I'll stare at the aisles because there's so many snacks that I would be totally happy with. But the fact that they're all out there in the open, I just stand there paralyzed and I end up picking something that I hate.
Yeah, it's tough. I think they'll go away. But anyway,
I hope so. I hope in another 10 years, we have realized as a society that not everything that gets invented should be used.
Indeed. Like, I don't know.
Like social media, like everybody's kind of privy to the fact that it's ruining society now. Like everybody's kind of on that same page.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think my use of Facebook and Instagram is ruining society, but
not your use. It's the use of society's as a whole. The use of it is becoming, I think, more detrimental than a useful tool.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll all get tamer. I think it'll get tamer. Anyway,
I hope so.
But yeah, like we're saying, there's a lot of we can talk about, I guess, the criticisms for panpsychism and integrated information. One of the big criticisms, I think, is that you can't falsify panpsychism, or it doesn't seem like possible to do it yet. How can you test a piece of matter to see if it's conscious or not?
That's why I'm saying it's kind of just like, it's more of a thought experiment than a valid theory, in my opinion. Like, because how do you, is there any way to prove any part of this theory at all?
That's the thing, is it doesn't yet tell you how you can look at something and say whether or not it's conscious. It just tells you that it is, if the information is integrated in a certain way.
Did this guy happen to invent the pet rock?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Because to me, this sounds like it's some sort of marketing
thing. Pet rocks?
Yeah. It's a theory that your pet rock might actually be like able to experience stuff.
Well, again, I think they clearly have some sort of big difference between something being conscious and something having experiences.
See, that's, I think, where I'm not quite grasping this whole thing, because what's the difference of being conscious and experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think for them, it's got to be that it's possible to be conscious without having any sensory experiences. It could just be like, you're conscious, but you don't experience anything. Like you're in a sensory deprivation tank.
But even someone in a sensory deprivation tank is going to have the experience of their own train of thought, their internal monologue.
Maybe they don't have any thoughts and they're in a separate sensory deprivation tank, but they're still conscious.
That to me is not the definition of consciousness then. Like, what?
You don't think it's possible to be conscious without thoughts in a sensory deprivation tank?
I don't know.
I think that's possible. Like,
you know, when someone's been knocked unconscious, that's basically being in a deprivation tank with no thoughts.
What if you're dreaming? Are you conscious?
You are.
Are you having sensory experiences? Nope. You're asleep.
Your brain is producing them, though. Your brain is putting in like a screensaver for you.
Ah, so maybe you could be conscious but not have any sensory experiences.
Well, now you're changing, because you're saying you can be conscious but not have any thoughts.
I think you could be conscious without thinking, yes. Because there are animals. I don't think animals have thoughts, but I think they're conscious.
I think they have thoughts. They're just not self-aware of those thoughts.
What language are their thoughts in?
It squeals.
Yeah.
Growls so. And squeals. I'm just saying that when an animal experiences pain, they might not be like, I, this animal, am experiencing pain right now, but they're still experiencing pain.
Right, but that's not a thought. Pain is not a thought, right?
You don't think pain manifests as thoughts in an animal?
You can think about, I mean, we can think about pain because we have language.
Right.
So we can think about it and discuss it.
Do you think that we doesn't have
language?
You think
it can't
that
think
we,
about pain.
Here's what I've always thought, that we don't think because we have language. I think we think in concepts and ideas, and then we interpret it with language, but we still have the thoughts. I'm not constantly running an internal monologue of everything I'm thinking. I'm having conceptual thoughts, and then if I want to really like dive into that thought, then maybe an internal monologue will start up. But as far as like thoughts, like, oh, I'm going to go here and do that, I don't think there's like a sentence that's playing. I don't think there's like a ticker tape of all my thoughts. I think it's mostly just conceptual ideas. And then sometimes they come and they manifest as like an internal monologue, but for the most part, it's just concepts and ideas that have no, you don't need to put a sentence to have an idea.
I believe you, but I have no idea what it would be like to have a thought that wasn't like
when you sit down at your desk with your mug of coffee and you set your mug down, do you think, I'm going to set my mug down? Or is there just an idea of setting a mug down and you just act it out?
Oh, well, I would call that like my intention. I wouldn't call that a thought. For me, a thought is like a sentence, like a proposition or something.
Okay. Well, our definitions of thoughts now are different. Because I think that if I'm going to get up and walk to another room, I don't necessarily have to think there's something in that room I want to get. I just, there's an object appears in my mind, and then the feeling of wanting it is in my mind. And then those two compel the action. I don't have to be like, I want this item. I'm going to go to that room and get it.
Okay. Yeah. So that's fair enough. We could include those as thoughts, like intentions and desires. We can include that as thoughts. Yeah. So that's just like another aspect of your conscious experience that is, again, is like, can you be conscious and just not have any of those things occurring? Or does consciousness only exist when those things occur? And that's kind of like, that seems like a big rub for this theory.
Yes, because I think that someone that's put under like anesthesia, like knocked out for surgery, they're unconscious. They don't have any thoughts happening. They're not dreaming. There's nothing happening. They're alive, but they're unconscious.
Yeah, that's another problem for the theory, it seems, because according to panpsychism, the matter is all still there and still conscious. So there has to be some explanation for why the introduction of the new matter, whatever the anesthesia is, like, for example, xenon gas completely ends consciousness as long as it's in the brain, which is weird because it's a noble gas and it does not interact with other elements. Very strange.
So xenon gas, is that anesthesia gas, or is that like it'll just knock you out? Like, what is that?
I don't know if they use it for anesthesia, but it like completely shuts down consciousness in the brain.
So, but it doesn't interact with anything else in the brain somehow.
Yeah, I don't know how it works.
Maybe it just takes up space and blocks. It doesn't interact at all. Like, it can't even block stuff.
Well, I mean, like when I say it doesn't interact, like the noble gases, they don't cause chemical reactions with other elements.
Right. So they just must be taking up real estate that other stuff needs for consciousness to be maintained.
Or because like it doesn't interact. Things can't interact through it. So it blocks stuff. Might be something like that. There's another problem. And this is the mental causation problem. Just like we like to think that our conscious experiences have causal power. So like what you're saying is you want to think that when you have the thought to go get a drink of water in the next room, that it's that thought that makes you get up. And
it's a combination of the sensation of feeling thirsty and the knowledge of where water is, but I don't think I need to think out the words, I need to go get some water.
Well, you think it's the, you would say it's the conscious experience that causes you to get up and go get it.
Yes.
Right. And so the question is, if matter is like, if you are a panpsychist and the consciousness is just there as a property of the matter, where does it play a causal role in you getting up? Because it's not like it appears you can explain everything about you getting up just by looking at the physical chain of effects of your body. And you don't need to appeal. There seems to be no reason to say like, oh, well, the only reason he stood up was because he had this conscious experience of wanting to go get a drink. You know, you could look at your body and see the chemical reactions and all of that stuff would happen without the need for thinking the matter itself is conscious. So, and that's weird because it's a very unwelcome and maybe even contradictory outcome to have a conscious experience that can't cause anything in the world to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final problem is called the combination problem. And this is the idea that, so every little bit of matter is conscious. Well, how is it the case that when you put them all together, they have a bigger consciousness, or like a merged consciousness, right? Because it's not like your conscious experience is just one little cell in your brain, right? That wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
So how is it that all of them together create a unified conscious experience? Why isn't it the case? This is the philosopher William James made this point. Why isn't it the case that if you get a bunch of people and have them all like touch their heads together in a circle, they don't form a super brain?
That would be crazy. Isn't that the hard question in philosophy, basically, is why does consciousness arise out of unconscious material?
Well, that is definitely the hard problem. Panpsychism, the way they approach that is they say every little bit of matter is already conscious. So then the problem is, okay, how do they all unify? On the other hand, if you're not a panpsychist, you're not saying every piece is conscious. You're saying the whole is conscious. The pieces are not.
So you're basically saying like it doesn't take any sort of complex mechanism for something to be conscious. It's like a quality that is outside of the physical realm.
They both say I don't think either of them are dualist. Maybe panpsychism is a little bit, but
because then like how can every piece of matter be conscious? Like there doesn't have to be any sort of complex physical. This is so confusing for me.
Okay, I'm trying to play on their team. The idea is that consciousness is on a spectrum.
Okay.
And on one end of that spectrum, it's basically doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a grain of sand compared to you. But if you integrate matter in such a way that it has like an information value where there's like a computer basically mm-hmm. that processes information, processes inputs and outputs. If you organize matter in that way, it becomes conscious, or its consciousness increases with the more information that it can process. I don't know exactly how it works, but you keep scaling this up. You scale it up from like a rock. I don't know what they would say about a rock because there's no inputs, there's no outputs.
No moving parts whatsoever.
Well, there's no input, there's no output. So there's no integrated information, but it is matter. So I'm not sure how they deal with that, but they do basically, as soon as you get to a simple mechanism, now the matter is organized in such a way that gives rise to the particular nature of that piece of integrated information's conscious experience. So
I can wrap my head around the spectrum idea where it's like the less complex creatures may seem, or not even creatures, less complex mechanisms might mm-hmm. seem to be lacking consciousness to us, but in reality there is a small form of it happening. You know, as like a tree it's fairly complex. So that would maybe be like in the middle of the spectrum. If human beings, you know, the hubris that we are and that we have, we're at the max end of consciousness. Trees could maybe, I could imagine them being in the middle somewhere and then a rock being on the far left.
Yeah. That's good. That's the idea that they want. They want, because they want to explain how it is that you can have these complex experiences. And the way they do that with, right? So how do you explain how all these individual pieces can have a complex experience like this? And the way they do that is they say each piece is conscious, and then the very nature of how they are organized to process inputs and outputs gives rise to the total conscious experience. And for the combination problem, I think some of these problems maybe are underestimating how complex a system something like the brain is.
Mm-hmm.
And that it would be, it just doesn't make, like, it's very easy to see physical explanations why two people touching skulls are not going to have a mind meld.
Well, have we tried removing the skull barrier and just mushing two brains together?
Well, I mean, eventually two people are going to have neural links connected.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
I don't know if that's going to be the same as, say, I'm sure something like this has happened before. I don't think people that have had this happen survive long, like conjoined twins that share, you know, where their brains are kind of connected, like the neurons somehow connected to each other's brains. So it's two brains, but they're legit connected by neurons. Has that ever happened? Like, can you share? You would think that neurons can now fire across between the two brains.
Yeah. Well, they've done stuff where, like, they do experiments all the time on people who have half a brain, like split brain, stuff like that. And like the two hemispheres of your brain are actually like two different brains. Like you can live with just half your brain.
And then you won't be as creative. You'll just be really good at math, and who needs that?
Yeah. But they do talk to each other. Like your hemispheres like talk to each other.
Right. And some people have that connection severed.
Yeah.
Right. And then I don't remember what the outcome of that is, but I've heard of that before, where the two halves of the brain can no longer communicate with each other.
Yeah, I think you get some weird stuff happening when that, if you sever someone's brain like that. I can't remember exactly what, but but I've always thought like we have no problem in physics with having this concept of fields where particle, like things can interact at a distance without touching each other through mm-hmm. fields, like magnets, for example.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like it's too crazy to think that things could have like a conscious field, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I remember when I was in electrical school and we started learning about like induction fields and stuff, where it's like just a collapsing magnetic field can induce a voltage in a coil of copper. It's kind of crazy. It literally is like, it feels like magic.
Yeah. All you have to do, right, is rotate a magnet around a coil of copper and that electricity starts flowing through mm-hmm. it. Right. Yeah.
And it's like, I have an induction stovetop, so I can put I'll turn it on, put my pan on the stove. The pan itself will get very hot, but the part where you put the pan on, it remains cold. It's mm-hmm. just because of induction. There is no heat coming from the stovetop itself. It's all coming through the magnetic field.
I think our friend Zach tried to show me that once by touching the stove when it was on and he burned himself.
Well, he probably didn't have an induction stove, because I can the only heat you get is the heat coming from the pan back onto the stovetop. Wow. But you can lift the pan off when it's ripping hot, and like less than a second later you can put your hand on it. It'll be warm, but it won't be as hot as the pan.
Amazing. Yeah, so that's maybe one metaphor. I don't know, like, if that's the metaphor they're thinking of, like consciousness is like electricity or something. I'm not sure.
Well, the brain does fire on electricity. Like the brain operates with electrical
currents.
Occurrence. Yeah. So I mean, I doubt there's enough to establish a magnetic field of any significance, but would be cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest problem for them is again, like, how do you falsify the theory? How do you prove, not necessarily how do you prove it, but how would you know that it was wrong? Like, what's a test that you could do to prove that a thermometer is not conscious? Seems really tough.
This is one of those things where the burden of proof should be on the guy positing this theory.
Yeah. I mean, another possibility is that we I mean, it's so strange because this problem has been around for so long. Like, how does matter become conscious? It's probably the oldest problem I can think of, and it seems like we're never any closer to solving it. So like, it could just be that, like, conceptually we just can't get there.
Mm-hmm.
It might just be beyond our abilities to, like, see that connection between matter and consciousness. Or panpsychism we might have to accept it. We might have to accept that this is a fundamental property of our weird universe, that mind and matter are kind of one thing.
I guess I'll accept it for now until more information comes in.
Yeah, it seems kind of like a theory of the gaps at the moment, because we don't have a good answer to the heart problem yet. God damn it, David Chalmers.
Well, I'm going to try not to think about it too much. All right. Well, I think I'm going to let you go. I got my parents just showed up, so I probably should go make contact here.
Yeah. Say hi to your parents for me.
Will do. And I will see you in a couple weeks.
Yes.
All right. Talk to you guys later. Stay conscious.
Stay conscious.
Bye.